It's the Barry Pod on 99.3 thevine.com.
This is the Barry Pod. This episode recorded January 3rd, 2024. And in the pod with me this time, it's Napa County Supervisor Ryan Gregory.
Good to be here. Thanks, Barry.
Welcome. Let's dive right in. A few weeks ago now, maybe a couple of months ago, it was a surprise announcement that you were not going to run for another term on the County Board of Supervisors, that the two terms would be it for you. A lot of folks were surprised by that, I'm sure. That it took me by surprise, being a pretty close political watcher. But there was a reason behind it, and it's been reported, but I'd like to give you a chance to talk directly about that.
Oh, thanks. Let me preface all this by saying, you know, in a competitive race, my feeling is you run hard to win or you don't run at all. And that's important to me. I guess it should be a surprise to many that were watching because I started my campaign and ordered signs, updated the website. I called all my supporters. I had a real path to success and gearing up for all the things that, you know, my family would normally be a part of. And then we got this diagnosis about my mom, who, you know, is going to have to fight cancer for the next period of time. And, you know, sort of saw my family who would have been, you know, saying, hey, Ryan, what can we do, you know, with your campaign as they were last time. But this time it's about mom and rallying around family, and just decided that I struggle with it because, you know, people know I wanted my third term. I had a lot of work to do left. I have a lot of work to do left. It just decided that it would have been selfish. It felt selfish at the time to choose that over family. So time to rally around mom instead of my campaign, and decided that it was time to call it at two terms.
And of course, best to your mother and all your family.
Thank you.
So far, so good.
So far, so good.
All right. So when you look back now, and you've got another year to go, so it's not like you're walking away from the job at this point, but you're looking back at 7 years of work. What stands out for you if you had to pick something and say, this is the accomplishment that I want to hang my hat on?
You know, and unfortunately, we've been plagued with crisis. So what I think most fondly about is how we got through our crises. And you know what they are. They're wildfire and COVID are the top two. Plenty of winter storm damage in there. That's not as interesting. But had our first wildfire in 2017, early in my first term. Certainly got tested. We haven't had wildfire like that before in terms, at least for this generation. To see the team respond the way they did and the community rally around themselves and put all their stuff away, you know, just rally around this thing and support ourselves to recover. And then the time after, and this was important in my career as a supervisor, the care I had to provide to the folks in my district that were affected by fire led me to understand their issues, led me to, you know, meet them, understand their issues, know where they live, know them by name. And so got really connected with my district through our wildfire because they needed our help. We implemented things like the Ag Pass, which we invented on the fly. It's becoming a state standard as to how do you let people back into fire areas that need to get in there for whatever reason. We helped people rebuild with certain sort of relief policies. We directed staff to give it their utmost attention and priority in terms of rebuilding. So helping the families recover from fire was huge. And then COVID came, and then dealing with that and the state requirements that came down to us, that implementing locally, having a voice at the state to actually influence what they were going to send down to us, and then implementing it locally was huge. It took a real involvement from all levels of us at the board level and staff. And I feel we did it fairly. We didn't overreach. We didn't run afoul of the state. We marched along and always cared about how we were affecting citizens and businesses, and got through that. And a few years later, you know, economies bounced back and we're stronger than ever. So for me, my calling card, I think, unfortunately, will be how we dealt with all these crises, got through them successfully, and we're stronger coming out of it. So I feel really good about that.
And the contrary question, the opposite side of that coin, is what in the 7 years so far do you wish you had done differently, or looking at being done with it in a year, do you wish you had more time to work on?
You know, I regret is looking back a few years ago, we were, you know, post wildfire, which we just talked about, we've discovered all the things we need to do to be ready and prepared for what is eventually going to come wildfire. We need to implement mitigation and fuel reduction, and there's a lot of work countywide to protect ourselves, knowing wildfire will come to visit again. We attempted a local tax revenue ballot measure, which I was part of leading, called Measure L. I put all my energy behind it, all my influence. Had a great shot at it. It didn't work with the voters. I regret, you know, some of that. Like, I think we could have done that better. I'd like to try that again. Somebody should. It likely won't be us next year, this year.
That's funding fire prevention.
Funding wildfire prevention. Yeah, thank you. So we need to get our arms around that. It's a it's an unfunded sort of local mandate that citizens expect, that it's not really fully funded, and we need to get our arms around that as a community. Mm-hmm. So I wish we had done Measure L better. I think somebody should take a hard look at trying something like that again.
Mm-hmm. The attitude then, and I'm sure you'd hit the same thing now, if you put that back out as a ballot measure to add in some new tax, some new funding source, people in the mood to say, take the money from somewhere else. There's got to be something that can be cut. There's got to be fat in this budget. Take the money from something else. I'm sure you've heard that a lot of times. What's the response to that?
I would say, you know, we have a budget. We have several meetings building up to our budget hearings in June, several check-ins, about three. They're coming up. So first might be soon, and then another in March. But that day in June when we're going through our booklet, our budget book, you know, nobody's there. Nobody's paying attention. So I would say to them, come pay attention, sit with us all day, run through the book with us, and look at where all the money's going, critical services. Look at, you know, positions still unfilled. Look at things still not done, and you'll see that's a fallacy.
Mm. That there is fat, that there is money to take from something else.
Yes.
Another trick, of course, that is sort of played on us is if you look at the total spending of the county for a year versus discretionary spending. That's really where a lot of people get confused. Oh, $10 million, look at all this. Look how big the budget is. That's not very much of the big budget.
Yeah. But you remember of our, let's say, approximately $500 million budget, about $200 million is discretionary local dollars, property tax, sales tax, transient occupancy tax. The other $300 million is funding from the state and the feds that's dedicated to one single purpose that we don't have flexibility over.
Mm-hmm.
So less than half of our budget is discretionary. And again, track all that money down and you'll see it's being put to good use.
Yeah. Complete switch of gears here in a different territory that I don't want to gloss over, because I think you have a unique ability to address this, my point of view, because you are trained as an engineer. And having 7 years now on the Board of Supervisors and paying attention to all these issues for a long time, we have this persistent problem, as some rural counties do, with special districts and things like water supply. And I think the biggest one may be Lake Berryessa area. I know Circle Oaks had some issues at one time, where you have not enough users and payers to support infrastructure improvements or upgrades or new systems, right? And it really seems like a tough nut to crack, how that problem gets solved. Can you speak from your knowledge as an engineer and as a supervisor about that kind of problem and what kind of solutions can be achieved in the future?
It's a great question. Yeah, the challenge is that whether it's a water treatment plant or a wastewater treatment plant, there's fixed costs. It's running all day long. It costs X. When you have a fewer users in the form of, let's say, a water treatment plant where you know, people pay by the amount of water they use, if they're asked to conserve, water. I think that's what you're getting at. And they're not paying as much in the system. So therefore, every few years, you got to do a study and charge them more. The way you solve it, I think, is you just get more efficient, creative with the treatment plant facilities. We need to look at local consolidation. Think about this. Up on Jameson Canyon, there is a City of Napa water treatment plant and an American Canyon water treatment plant right near each other. Okay, that was a relic of the past. I think there's more spirit these days around joining forces. Today, I think we would have done that differently. But imagine that, right? If we could consolidate two plants into one and run it together. That would be a huge boon to the ratepayers.
Yeah, and that's the kind of thing I'm thinking about. You can't just keep kicking the can down the road when you're looking at deteriorating water pipes or treatment functions. And it's not like you can grow your way out of that. You're not going to build 400 more homes in that area served by that district, right?
Yeah.
So you're kind of stuck.
Yeah, you got to be smart about it. Napa San, I'm on the board of directors for Napa San. Really, one of the things I've really enjoyed in the last 7 years is being a part of the Napa San team. If you're in the city of Napa and you flush your toilet, we get it and we treat it. We turn it into recycled water. And get this, soon we're going to be talking about potable reuse. We're talking about treating it to a higher level and actually drinking it.
Toilet to tap, as they
don't
call it.
Say that. It's potable reuse. But it's coming. It's coming to every community soon. San Diego's, I think about 30% of their water supply right now is potable reuse in San Diego, so that they've kind of broken ground for the rest of the industry. So it's coming. So we got to be smarter. But what I mean at Napa San is we made a decision to upgrade 2% of our collection system a year. So we find the oldest pipes that have the most issues, and we replace 2% a year. And so methodically, it's not a big hit to the ratepayer, but methodically we go and take care of our system to where you don't see it as a ratepayer because we're being smart about it. So you just need and we have real pros running our water and wastewater systems who know what's going on. So I would like people to have faith in that.
And what you describe, sometimes the analogy comes in terms of maintenance, taking care of a system versus replacing and stuff, that, if it's the roof on your house, you don't have to be missing your entire roof for it to fail. If there's one big hole, the rain will come in, right? Some people will keep patching the roof until there's no chance left before they replace it. Others have, I think I'm going to have to replace the roof because it's starting to leak. And it's lived its useful life. We hear this from government all the time, that we've gotten 40 or 50 years out of this thing and it's going to be expensive to replace it, but we really don't have an option. That's a hard pitch to make to the voters these days.
It certainly is, especially like look at roads. You live on a street that hasn't been paved for a while, and you see a neighbor's street that was in relatively good condition, getting a fresh coat. And you're like, what gives? Well, the cost of maintaining that fairly good road is much less than what it's going to cost to fix your road because it's gone too far, right? So that's hard for people to understand. We've got to base it on sort of the condition and spend our money wisely, and we do. We did for a record, by the way, in the county, 45 miles of road paving in 2023. The record for Napa County.
Can you attribute that to the transportation tax?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. To Measure T and to SB1, which added some gas tax. The gas tax, which was the only funding for road work, was set in the 80s, and it hadn't changed until SB1. And so in that time, we got way behind. And so now we're catching up. We have a lot of long way to go. Mm-hmm. Many of you live on a street that hasn't been done yet, and I'm sorry, but know that it's coming. You're on a list somewhere, and whether you're in the city or the county, we're going to get to it.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to look at that list and say, oh, look, my street's on the list for 7 years from now.
Yeah, but you're on the list, Barry.
It's like trying to get in at the acupuncturist or something. there are some big challenges out there that never really change, no matter who's in office, parties, all that doesn't matter. These questions, which I think you've been good with, infrastructure questions, are tough because things have gotten more expensive. You're at the mercy of the markets in terms of materials and labor and whether labor is available, as we learned during the pandemic, right? And I guess I'm always trying to get on the side, get into the ear of people who feel like government can't do anything right, because there's a lot of stuff getting done right all the time, but it's the one thing that's not that draws all the attention.
Yeah.
And we in the media focus on the thing that's not getting done.
I think what we need to focus more on, and this is through our regional body, MTC, our local transportation agency, NVTA, we really need to get our arms around the South County congestion problem. Sure, South School Junction is going to be done soon. We're going to fly over, and that's going to be great, but you're just going to get clogged up again. As we all know, you're going to get clogged up again down at Jameson Canyon. We've got to fix that. We almost need to be singularly focused on that issue until we fix it. And we I'm not saying we don't do that. I'm saying we need to do it better.
Yeah. That's really when that Airport Boulevard Highway 12 intersection gets addressed, that will really be a game changer, because now you have the connection on the Solano County side of 12 and you have the South School Junction. The only other one then is Carneros Highway, right? That one needs attention.
Yeah.
But you're getting close to it, like a continuing, the traffic will continue to move. You won't have these big long lines, air quality improvements, all kinds of benefits.
Yeah. Yeah. And we know when we get into land use debates, it's about housing problem. It's about the traffic problem. For us to be genuine about addressing our land use debate or being honest in our land use debate, we have to be honest about the impacts on our community. They're real. We're all clogged up trying to get out of Napa and blame that on whatever, but it's a problem and we need to fix it. And again, be just really change our focus and dedicate more energy towards that.
Agreed. Now, switching gears here for a moment, and let's come to land use, because something happened here very recently that we're all familiar with, involving the La Colline Vineyard proposal that was, in some people's minds, kind of a game changer, certainly eye-opening, eyebrow-raising, where a project that seemed to be doing all the right things, getting all the right approvals, has now been turned down by the board. That's not real common. And some people feel like this is a watershed moment, no pun intended, that things are going to be different from here on. Some have said this is representative of what the new composition of the board is going to be like. There's a lot of chatter, but what do you think about that particular moment? You voted in favor of approving it, along with Supervisor Pedroza, as I recall, but you were in the minority on that one. So talk a little bit about that decision.
Yeah, it was interesting. It was 3-2 to support the appeal and effectively deny the project after 9 years of process. And again, yeah, I would say that the applicant did everything they were asked to, met all the requirements, followed the rules, and in fact went even further to modify their project to incorporate some of the bigger setbacks that were part of Measure C. Do you remember Measure C a few years ago? There were some more restrictive requirements in there that didn't get voted on, so it didn't get. But they looked at Measure C even and said, let's apply some of those setbacks and bring the project, you know, further away from Conn Creek, etc. So I felt, first of all, I believe in the general plan. I believe in the zoning. Those are the rules. You need to follow the rules if you're a fair and honest broker with the county, and you do what you're supposed to do. I think you should get a very fair shake, and I don't think they did. The biggest reason why I voted to support it was the claim was that the project will fail, and it will hurt Conn Creek and Linda Falls. Now, I love Conn Creek. I've been to Linda Falls. I go to Angwin a lot to ride my mountain bike. If you haven't been there, by the way, Angwin Forest, the PUC Forest, is amazing. It's open to the public. I love it up there. It's one of my favorite places. I'm not going to do anything to hurt Conn Creek or Linda Falls. The claim was that it's going to fail. All the engineering and best management practices aren't going to work, and Conn Creek's going to get hurt. And then therefore Lake Hennessy is going to get hurt, and your water quality, because we all drink Lake Hennessy water, will be affected. I just couldn't agree with that, because what you're saying is those engineering practices, BMPs, mitigations don't work anywhere. Right? I just couldn't agree with that. I'm an engineer. I know how they work, and I know the design that goes behind them. And I just couldn't agree with the fact that these things are going to fail, and so the project should be denied. So that's where I drew the line, and I had to support it. That plus the you know, just due process.
And there is a precedent in there that you'd think would be chilling for any landowner who has a plan, based on what you just said, that the rules can be changed midway through after you've committed money and resources. And like you said, with this one, nine years to this point. And then you're basically told, no, sorry, you've wasted all your time and money. You can't do this at all. That's pretty harsh in any industry. Have you heard from people that feel that's a chilling effect and are going to pull back on proposals now?
I think you'll see people pulling back on proposals with this uncertainty in the air. Really what I worry about is, think of all the code violators out there that we're dealing with that are watching this, okay? Stepping away from the vineyard example, let's look at just use permit stuff. So, you know, your business is growing, you need to add a few employees, and you want to maybe add a little square footage to your building. Those require use permit modifications in the Napa County. You're watching this and you're saying, well, that's a risk. I don't know if I want to do that. Maybe I'll just add them and ask for forgiveness later if I'm caught. Okay, so this, I think, just feeds the problem with code compliance that we have here in Napa County because of how deeply regulated we are. So we got to look at this, you know, holistically and completely and really think about it.
And speaking of being deeply regulated, and since you mentioned use permits, a couple of years ago now, there was a movement to get wineries particularly to update use permits because so many people were out of compliance, their businesses had grown, they were double, triple their capacity in different ways. Has that made a difference?
I think it has. We laid the path out. We acknowledged it was important for me. We acknowledged that, you know, this situation, let's say nobody's to blame. We're not exclusively blaming the property owner, the business. We're saying, okay, us county, we contributed to this. The system's really difficult, hard to understand. And we haven't been as nimble as we've had to be to allow your business to grow. So we recognize that. And I think it was a big move for this board in this county a few years ago. And I think it's been really good because the tone set that, hey, we're not blaming you. Come on in and we'll help you. Let's just go back to examples in the city of Napa. You're a business on First Street and you want to add a table or two. Maybe add outdoor dining that you don't have. You just do it. You know, maybe not the outdoor dining part on the sidewalk, but you know, you do what you need to do as a business. You add tables, you add staff. You need a couple more servers, you add them. In the county, to add two employees, you have to get a use permit modification. All right? So I can guarantee you this county's not nimble enough to deal with that situation. So you've got businesses needing to grow and adapt, and we're not able to keep up with them. That's a problem. And we just need to get our arms around that, acknowledge it, and try to solve the problem. And again, I hope with this next board, you've got people interested in doing that.
I have to say from personal experience, the older I get, the more likely I am to go for the I will apologize later option. Just about everything in my life. Like, you know, I'm not breaking any serious laws, not killing anybody, but you know, it's like, if you catch me at this later, cool, we'll talk then, You know, because of just what you said, how the small business owner can't even think about a use permit modification for something so minor. If you're going to double the amount of gallons you're producing or double your visitation, they're going to say, well, I'm not going to get away with that. But these small changes, it is very restrictive.
In the amnesty program that we just talked about, it is really geared towards, it's years of those minor changes. A couple employees year, 2 years later, a couple more employees. In over 20 years, it adds up to what might look on paper as a big change to your use permit. And so we said, come on in, you know, we're not, you know, business, we support you. Come on in and let's help you get in compliance.
Yeah. So many different topics. We could talk for a long time, but I want to wrap up by two last questions. You mentioned the general plan update that's pending in the near future. You mentioned it a couple of times. And I guess what I want to ask you is, why is it important, and in context particularly what we've just been talking about, what should people who are concerned about these issues be focused on, you think, in reviewing
it?
Well,
you know, for me, I was one of the advocates for doing the general plan sooner than later. The last time we did it was 08, and these planning documents tend to, you know, the industry standard is, let's say, 20 years. We didn't really have to get into it until a few years from now. But there was enough debate. I call them spot fires. There were enough spot fires with all these small land use debates, which were really all begging the bigger question. But should this little vineyard be approved? Should this winery be allowed to expand? It taking an incredible amount of political capital and energy, all these little spot fires. And I just felt that there's enough of this question and interest in the community right now of the carrying capacity of this community. You'll hear that a lot coming forward, carrying capacity. How much more can we handle? That I just felt like, well, the only logical, structured, organized way for me to answer that is to look at it in the general plan context. In an organized way, you got to look at all the pieces together, not single any one issue out, and just really get into it. So I felt, let's get into the general plan update. And so we kind of kicked it off last year. This year we'll take some important steps, so I do feel I'll be part of getting it on the right foot. We'll be looking at establishing and composing a advisory committee. Anybody familiar with what the city of Napa just went through? They had a committee of citizens that were involved in moving it forward, so we'll be establishing that this year and hiring a consultant that'll run it, and this thing will then take a life of its own and run for a few years after. So we'll get it off on the right foot this year. Super important. These things are going to chart the course for this county for the next 20 years. So let's get it right.
Yeah. And there's probably been a number of times in the last 50 years where somebody said, you know, this general plan update is really going to matter. But I think now it's probably more true than ever. Right?
More true than ever. And the other big thing, and this is going to be such a big thing going forward, is the housing mandates from the state. We think we got through our housing element update this time. The cycles are now, I think it's 7 years, or 8 years, I think now. But who knows how that changes, right? Who knows how that's going to adapt. But we got through this one, we think. We just submitted our revised housing element from the county, and we think the state's signaling that they're going to be okay with it. But the next one, which isn't too long from now, we got to start planning for it, you know, sometime soon. This idea that Napa County is special, we've got our ag preserve treat us differently. That worked for a while. That was working when I first started. It doesn't work anymore. We've got our state legislators saying, well, great, you are special. We love you, but you've got to participate in the Bay Area's growth just like everybody else. So we're not getting that accommodation anymore. So the mandates will keep coming. And I'm telling you, there's going to be some point where we're full. This, you know, the city limit. We're full within the city limit. What then? All right, let's leave that hanging. What then? As a community, we got to be ready to answer that question.
Yeah, that day is coming.
It's coming.
Two other topics. Leaving the Board of Supervisors, do you intend to endorse someone?
I haven't thought of that. I haven't made that decision yet.
So,
it's a short campaign. I want everybody to run on their merits. Feel strongly about that, and so I'll continue to watch, but yeah. I haven't made that decision.
And as you mentioned earlier, if there are no more than two candidates, then it's over in March, and that's something people should focus on.
Really? Yeah, I'm surprised by the amount of people that don't know it's even going to be in March, mm-hmm. let alone be done in March. Mm-hmm. If there are, and that's the other thing, if I had entered, you know, I would have had, there would have been three in District 2, myself, Liz Alessio, and Doris Gentry. Very likely forces a runoff in November. So there's a good chance you'd be looking at, you know, a campaign all next year. But in this case, there's only two in each race, so we know it'll be done because, you know, somebody's going to get 50% plus one.
That's it.
So pay attention. It's, you know, it's here. It's a moving to the March primary has been a challenge. It's only the second one, so we're still kind of getting our arms around how to how to run a campaign for a March primary. You're supposed to be running in December and January when
nobody cares.
Nobody cares. They're off on vacation. That's right. So it's a challenge.
We'll do our part here on the Vine with the Barry Pod to interview people that matter about that. Last question. You made a reference to me off the air about how local politics has gotten ugly. And I think that's true all over this country right now. And you see even intense, ugly campaigns for school board seats. People aren't even getting paid to be on school boards. God bless them, right? What do you mean by that in your context, and what can we do to change it?
Well, I my interest in getting into government has grown over the years as a civil engineer, bringing projects to city councils and planning commissions around the Bay Area. That really got me interested in government and how it works. There was a civility as I was contemplating running for office that in 2016, we all know what happened in 2016 and at the national level. What I saw now that I'm in government change dramatically is local government seems to now be affected by the national, what's happened at the national level. There's times where we don't agree to disagree anymore. Those become personal attacks, going so far as to attack your family. So there's a civility we've lost at local government level, and I'm not just talking about Napa. I'm talking about everywhere, because I talk to my friends across the state through our state association, and they're all facing the same problem, some way worse, right? So we need to get back to some civility at local government. We should be problem solvers. We should be dedicated, public servants for the people, and less politicians.
And talk about policies and not people, right? Talk about ideas and issues and not personal lives.
Yeah, right? That's the only way we're going to...
So simple.
It's the only way we're going to solve any problems locally. And again, locally is where you solve the problems. It's our last hope.
And I've said so many times, we're so cynical about government in this country, mostly because of the federal government. And then depending on what state you live, you may get additional cynicism about your state government. But the rubber meets the road at the local level, and the people like you who do this, have done this work, I've known so many of them over the years who are sincere and earnest and working hard for the better interest of the community. They're not getting much out of it. You don't leave this job and become a Washington lobbyist, thanks for your service, as they say.
Thank you, Barry. It's been great being a friend of yours and being on the show so many times over the years.
Absolutely. You're always a great guest because you really answer the questions very directly. Appreciate that. Ryan Gregory, County Supervisor, here on our Barry Pod, recorded January 3rd, 2024.
You're listening to the Barry Pod, tastings from Wine Country Live in the morning.
On 99.3, thevine.com.